This is the Future of Water, where we talk about all the ways in which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. Today, we're going to talk about water infrastructure, trenchless solutions, and mergers and acquisitions. But I'll be the first to admit, because of my current location in wooded New Hampshire and seemingly poor internet connection, I'm going to keep the news headlines down to one just to see if I could preserve some bandwidth for my other rural American neighbors. So one headline, let's start with it. Everything is bigger in Texas, the fraying interconnection between critical infrastructure segments, water, power, and gas is on full display in Texas. When I woke up this morning, I learned that 590 local water systems across 141 counties have reported disruptions to their water wastewater service. This affects approximately 11.8 million residents. That's pretty astounding. One, it speaks to the size of Texas, but also it really gets to the point of what are we doing, or what are utilities on the water side of infrastructure thinking when it comes to not only their power supplies, but their gas and energy supplies. It's definitely a problem going forward that is often overlooked. And I will say, you know, at the time of the wildfires in California a couple of years ago in 2019, our team was trying to figure out, hey, what does this mean? Because a number of investor-owned water utilities are out buying generators and preparing for backup supply, because in some cases they've been held liable for not being able to provide water. One, homes burn down when there's not a water supply, but also water supplies and wastewater treatment systems have to shut down if there's not a water supply. So solutions for organizations addressing water risks and opportunities are huge, right? And sometimes they're as simple as, do you have a backup generation strategy or redundancies built in? Remote monitoring, are you able to monitor not only water quality, but also water levels in your tanks, or, you know, where do you and your community stand? Distributed treatment is something that may catch some tailwinds after this. Instead of relying on centralized systems, is it better to rely on centralized systems? Also for industrial players, you know, have on-site treatment, have reuse, be more efficient, and then you don't have to rely on the broader network that's tied to the power grid, particularly if you have a backup generator. And also just basic asset management and asset management strategies. That's something not to be overlooked. There are a lot of really small systems in Texas, I might add, and I suspect a lot of them are woefully unprepared for what's happening right now. And this is a big problem that needs to be considered, because our data shows the big events, whether it be drought, wildfire, hurricane, or cold temperature, freeze driven, they're on the rise every year. That's what our data tells us. Over the past two decades, that's exactly what's happening. The billion-dollar climate-related events are happening more and more often and more regularly across the U.S., if not the rest of the world. So blackouts, in this case, to put it in perspective, according to Eaton, who pulls some data together on blackouts, from 2008 to 2017, California experienced almost 4,300 blackouts, Texas, 1,600, New York, 1,500. That's three states. That's almost 7,000 to 8,000 blackouts that have happened over the course of the decade. And there's a collateral impact that we're seeing in Texas. So that's our one news item of the day. Sorry it's cold in Texas. It's cold in New Hampshire, but New Hampshire is better suited for this, unfortunately. So if you have questions or want to learn more or receive more news headlines, you can always visit Bluefield Research's website and register to receive our weekly Waterline newsletter, which shares news, data, sometimes complimentary insights on the water industry, not only in the U.S., but also globally, which is where we focused. So let's get into it. I have invited our guest, Mario Marchand, to join us to talk about the recent acquisition of Aegion by New Mountain Capital, and also what's happening in trenchless, but also M&A. So let's jump to it. All right. So earlier this week, we woke to the news that New Mountain Capital, private equity firm, had acquired Aegion, a soon to be pure play water services and solutions provider. And so I reached out to Bluefield's newest senior analyst, Marielle, to discuss not only Aegon, but also its water business and what might this mean going forward. So Marielle, how's it going?
Pretty good. Glad to be here.
Thanks. Yeah, it's good to catch up. I know we talk a lot, but this one came together pretty quickly for us because, I don't know, when was it, yesterday or the day before when we heard the news of this announcement?
Yeah.
Of the Aegon deal?
Yeah, just yesterday, I think.
So let's walk through the basics. So can you give me a little bit of background? Like, what is the deal? What are we talking about when it comes to New Mountain and Aegon?
Yeah, absolutely. So New Mountain Capital, as you said, a private equity firm out of New York, has acquired Aegon for $963 million, taking the company private. So to start with, Aegon is a water services company focused mainly on trenchal solutions. Its annual revenues were $1.2 billion in 2019. And Aegon really focuses on infrastructure rehab, mainly pipelines and wastewater, water, energy, mining, and refining industries. Although back in December, the company did announce its plan to divest from the energy services segment of its business. So to that point, the company has been going through its own sort of restructuring. It's pulled back from many of its international markets. The company sold off its Spanish and Australian CIPP contracting entities in early 2020. And it's also selling its contracting business in Northern Ireland. So this restructuring seems to point to a new focus on U.S. municipal markets for Aegon. And we really see Aegon as sort of the 800-pound gorilla in the rehab industry, especially in the CIPP market for wastewater pipes through their Institute Form business. The company holds a significant percentage of the market share there, though they do have capabilities beyond CIPP. Most notably to that point, back in 2016, they acquired Underground Solutions and their fusible PVC solutions for pressure pipe rehab, which can be used across a number of different trenchless technologies, including horizontal directional drilling, pipe bursting, and slip lining.
Okay, so now you're getting into the weeds. So I think it's really interesting. I mean, I would call out that the acquisition was $963 million or so. So, I mean, we're getting close to $1 billion. So for one, that's a huge deal in the water sector, particularly for what I think we would call is almost a pure play. I mean, they're really trying to get out of energy. The energy markets have not been kind to those active in the space more recently, but it's a big deal. I would also say, so is to your point, you know, I don't know, now when you walk around cities in particular, you do see the Institute Form truck. So that brand is out there. Like you said, they are the 800-pound gorilla. But you're getting into the weeds of sort of the slip lining and what is it? So what is, we call it CIPP, cured in place pipe, I guess how we'd explain it. What is it? How does it really work?
So CIPP is a trenchless rehab method used to rehab damaged pipes. So it can be used in both municipal and industrial applications. To date, the largest addressable market has been for the rehab of wastewater pipe. But we are seeing increasing use of CIPP for water, which is driven by better technologies and solutions, especially around lateral reinstatement, which is really one of the trickier parts of CIPP for water, and something that Aegon in particular has been working on, robotic reinstatement for laterals for their Institute Main, which is their CIPP for water pipe. So basically the CIPP process involves a flexible felt or fiberglass liner being saturated with resin and inserted into the existing damage pipe. And then that resin is cured using either hot water, steam, or ultraviolet light to form a new pipe within that existing one that can add decades to the life of that pipe.
Okay, you're getting way ahead of me, technically speaking. So I would say, I mean, we've heard about this for a while. I think you're pointing out that wastewater has really been the market historically for these solutions. We're starting to see more activity. And I know you've done research. We've got a report on it that we put out that addressed this or talked about it, but we're starting to see more activity in the water space. But I guess the question is, we look at the municipal markets. For those who've been on our webcast, clients have seen our forecast and analysis. Things are not necessarily looking pretty for the municipal sector, given the financial headwinds. They're not already here, they're coming, I think. At least that's our analysis. So what are the benefits? I mean, is this a good opportunity? Like, what's the upside for using trenchless solutions?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And I think when we talk about the benefits, we do want to move beyond just talking about CIPP into trenchless technologies in general. So we're really talking about installing, replacing, and rehabilitating underground pipe infrastructure without digging up the entire pipe, which is generally referred to as open cut. So trenchless does include CIPP as one of the many trenchless technologies, but there are others that can be used to replace existing pipes with a new one. So an example of that would be pipe bursting, or even install an entirely new pipe where a pipe didn't already exist. So you can do that without digging a trench in the ground for that pipe using technologies like horizontal directional drilling. So I just wanted to touch on those other technologies before I jumped into the benefits, which are definitely significant. Trenchless is said to offer about 30% savings compared to traditional dig and replace methods. And savings can be even higher in urban areas. And this is really because with trenchless, the work can be done faster and is less labor intensive. And disruption to the public is also minimized using trenchless. And this is all because the technologies don't require digging up the entire street. All that's really required is digging these smaller access pits along the pipe so that you can access it, but you don't need to dig up the entire length of the pipe.
Yeah, so just so I understand it, there are existing pipes in the ground, let's just say a wastewater pipe. You're in an urban environment, you can access it. So you have two ways. You can just go dig up the city block, right? You know, straight down the middle of the street where the pipes are, figure out what's happening. But if you have a good understanding of the pipe, what it is, its integrity, what you can do is sort of work from either end or sort of cut holes along the way as opposed to digging up the whole thing and sort of work from one end and push or pull a liner through, right? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And so as a result of being able to push or pull a new pipe through the existing pipe, the projects generally have shorter timelines and are less expensive. And I'd say that less expensive piece right now is more important than maybe it was in the past because of COVID and the resulting recession. So I feel like we talk about this a lot, but we really expect municipal budgets to be tight due to declining tax revenues. People really aren't out there spending money. So cities may be more willing to take a second look at trenchless if they haven't been too keen on it in the past as a way to save money on their rehab projects.
Stepping back, looking sort of at COVID, at recessionary or financial impacts on cities, like you mentioned it, you know, declining tax revenues for cities. If you've been in large urban areas in the US, I'll speak of specifically in my experience that they're pretty quiet these days, definitely in the Northeast. And so the expectation is that's going to continue. It's going to put pressure on the cities. Their pipes are aging regardless, right? They're getting older. I mean, wastewater pipes, they're gases, they corrode depending on what they're made of. There are a number of different factors that can impact the integrity of the pipes. But going forward, it seems like, you know, I think our forecasts show 20 to 25% reductions in CapEx over the next, 4 to 5 years in the US for municipal or water systems. But this opportunity is big for urban cities. And that's really what I was getting at, because once you get into rural areas, there's less disruption. It's just easier just to cut the trench in the ground, pull it up. It's probably closer to wastewater pipes in particular, probably closer to the surface than they are maybe in dense urban areas. So this is really a potential urban, suburban solution that creates less disruptions. But it's been around a long time, and there are a number of key players in the market. So let's talk a little bit about Aegion's new owner. So Aegion was publicly traded. or still is and soon to not be. It's going to be private, owned by New Mountain Capital. New Mountain is a private equity firm. Do you have any background on New Mountain and what they've been up to?
Yeah, I have a bit of background. New Mountain is a private equity firm, as you said, with over $30 billion in assets under management. They also just recently, back in December, I think it was, acquired Infomark, who is a water services provider to small and mid-sized municipal utilities. And Infomark was once owned by Severn Trent and was acquired by PPC and Alston Capital for $62 million back in 2017. So that's a bit of background on New Mountain. And then just to maybe touch on some M&A activity in the Trenchill space in particular, we have seen a fair amount of M&A in the space, over 30 deals since 2016. So Vortex has been especially acquisitive. They've made 6 acquisitions over the past 2 years that have expanded their service territory and their Trenchill's capabilities. And Vortex is also an example of a Trenchill's company that's received private investment. Platform Partners, who's a middle market investment firm based out of Houston, Texas, invested in them back in 2017 with the intention of supporting growth and acquisitions. And then some other pretty large acquisitions that we've seen in the Trenchill space in particular include Toro's acquisition of Charles Machine Works in 2019. For $700 million and Granite Construction's acquisition of Lane in 2018 for $350 million. So the space has been pretty active in terms of M&A, and it'll definitely be interesting to see what Aegion does under new ownership and as a private company.
Yeah, I think without a doubt, they definitely see opportunities prior to COVID where there's a demand for rehabbing existing infrastructure. You know, there's no doubt, whether it be on the wastewater side, but also on the water side. I think the other thing that's interesting, I mean, Toro, that you said they spent $700 million for Charles Machine Works. I mean, what's different from the Toro Charles Machine Works deal to the Aegion New Mountain deal is that Charles Machine Works was focused on a lot of different sectors. They focus on electric utility sector. They focus on gas. They also do water. It's definitely was a professional services play, it seems, for Toro. But that being said, you know, Charles Machine Works with, say, Hammerhead, and they own Ditch Witch. Those were big brands for them. And so that's the Toro piece. Vortex, they haven't made big deals like that. I mean, they've been sort of picking off the smaller players. And I suspect in this case, probably a lot of smaller regional players or local players that are providing these services and solutions. And Aegion, on the other hand, like you said, they're big, they're over $1 billion. They're effectively a pure play water player at this point with their divestment of their energy services still sort of hanging over. But, and New Mountain may decide to pull back from that decision. They may decide to keep it. Maybe they've come around and say, wow, you know, West Texas intermediate prices at a certain level, the energy market may be recovering post COVID. We'll see what happens with that. But I would say definitely a big deal. What I also find interesting is, I mean, New Mountain, they've suddenly acquired really two big deals. I mean, I know you mentioned Severn Trent sold Infomark for $62 million, somewhere in that range, to PPC and Alston Capital. But I think PPC and Alston Capital, they turned that thing around and made bank, as I would call it, in their sale to New Mountain. And they definitely cleaned up the organization. It seems, I'm really optimistic about what Infomark is doing. But it seems like now they've got Infomark, a utility services provider. They've got Aegion, which is also more of a network service provider. To what extent they either come together, I'm not sure. Maybe they just remain separate because they are different businesses. But at an ownership level, there are definite synergies from experiences to be learned. And really, platforms, right? Their platforms, each of them are significant enough across the U.S. and into Canada, maybe, that they can apply their experiences and maybe pick off other players, right? So they're in pretty good shape. I mean, I might also add that, you know, Infomark, before you jumped on, we were talking a little bit about, or I was talking about what's happening in Texas. Infomark has a strong position in Texas with its municipal utility district systems that it's serving. And I bet they have a lot of red lights flashing these days. So be interesting to see how that plays out. All right. Well, anything else to add on that? And if not, anything else you're working on these days that listeners might be interested in?
I feel like this is said at the end of the podcast often, but we're working on the OPEX forecast. It'll be out soon. Looking forward to it. I think it'll be really helpful and interesting to get a better sense of that market and where the money's being spent across budget categories within utilities.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we have a podcast coming. I think by the time this is released, the webcast will already be out there, but we were presenting to clients on how we use data and what we see in data, not only historically, but also going forward. So look, I know this was last minute. We saw the news, thought it was interesting. You've done a lot of work, put out published research on the trenchless market, as well as just the municipal pipe market. This is kind of your bailiwick. So thanks for taking a couple of minutes to share some thoughts with us, and we'll catch up soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Reese.
All right. Cheers. All right, guys. So before we sign off, a couple things. Give us a rating. Subscribe to Waterline, our weekly newsletter. You can get insights and information from there, but also subscribe to or download the Future Water. The more you download, the more it helps us, but also give us a rating. We want those ratings. And lastly, if there are topics you're interested in, you can always reach out to us at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic or ideas that you'd like us to discuss. We're doing this for you, not us. And also lastly, tell a friend about it. It's a good time to reach out to a friend. All right. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit bluefieldresearch.com. Take care. Talk soon.